going to talk about the race for governor in Wisconsin this year, following the recent news that a candidate favored by some progressive Democrats has officially taken her name out of contention. State Senator Kathleen Vinehout announced she will not seek the Democratic nomination for governor because of the time she needs to recover from injuries she received in a car accident last month. That leaves the only officially announced candidate to now challenge Governor Scott Walker, former Trek bicycle executive Mary Burke. Can Mary Burke defeat Governor Walker? Will the lack of a primary, if there is a lack of a primary, be good or bad for the Democratic Party? Governor Walker will be delivering his State of the State address this week. Does he have a strong record to run on? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, January 21st. We will talk about whether Mary Burke can convince progressive Democrats to vote for her. What about independents? Are they likely to go for Burke or Governor Walker? What are the major issues likely to be in this campaign? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is David Cannon, a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
One of the reasons we wanted to do this show is that we talked to a liberal-leaning guest on our Week in Review on Friday when this news was announced that State Senator Kathleen Vinehout was not going to run for the Democratic nomination. And he thought that this was bad for Democrats and that the lack of a primary was going to hurt Democratic chances in the general election. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I would say on balance, it's a good thing for the Burke campaign. But your previous guest was right that that is a bit of a double-edged sword here. It's not all positive. There are definitely some negatives in not having a primary. The negative is a couple. First of all, Mary Burke has not been a statewide candidate before. She's not a seasoned candidate. She hasn't been tested in the kind of rigorous campaign she'll be facing against Governor Walker. So a primary campaign is good in that it's a kind of a warm-up in a way. It gives you a chance to test some of your messages, gives you a chance to hone your stump speech in front of audiences, gives you a chance to appear more in front of the media like you'll be doing in the general election campaign. So just as a kind of a trial run for someone who is not experienced, that can definitely be a good thing. The second thing I think also that would have been good about a primary election for Mary Burke is that she also would have been in the news in a way that she's not going to be now over the next several months. That so a good example of this is the Hillary Clinton Barack Obama primary election season that they had back in 2008, where coming into that a lot of Democrats were saying, oh, this is going to be terrible for the party. It's going to split us apart. You're going to get the Hillary supporters won't support Barack Obama. They'll be all disillusioned with what happened. And that was very hard fought, went down to the wire. The very last primary was still being contested between those two candidates. But after it was all over, I think the consensus was this was actually a good thing for Barack Obama, that it did allow him to be tested in a way he hadn't been tested before. And it overall kept Obama's campaign in the news in a way that John McCain just disappeared from the front page for like 4 or 5 months. And so McCain had the nomination wrapped up. Everyone's ignoring him, and they were paying attention to Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. And so that kept his name in the news in a way that he wouldn't have had otherwise. So Mary Burke could be facing some of that, whereas had she had a hotly contested primary election, that would have been in the news through the summer. And so there is a bit of a downside there. Now, on the other hand, I think there's a big upside for her. And clearly being able to focus her campaign now on Scott Walker and not have to worry about a primary election, that's a huge plus. And the other big plus, obviously, is money. That it takes a lot of money to run a primary election. Now she's not going to have to waste that money on the primary. She can focus that all on Scott Walker. So again, on balance, I would say it's a net positive for the Burke campaign, but there are some costs.
Yeah. You also, though, aren't going to have to see your Democratic primary opponent appear in ads for Scott Walker criticizing you.
Well, right. That is the other thing that can happen. If it's a divisive primary and the two candidates in the primary really go after each other, that definitely happens sometimes, where if there's a charge that's made in an ad during the primary election, those words can be used then against the candidate in the general election. And so that is another potential downside of having a primary, absolutely.
Yeah, and with the Republican presidential primary, we saw all of the candidates, or many of the candidates, putting their feet in their mouths.
Well, true. That definitely happened on the Republican side. Although you'd have to say Mitt Romney, I don't think was hurt by the Republican primaries necessarily. I mean, there were definitely some charges made against Romney during the primaries, but nothing that Barack Obama wouldn't have made anyway, I think. And so overall, while the Republican primary, presidential primaries, weeded out a lot of candidates that, that, as you say, open mouth, insert foot, I don't think it really did too much to harm Mitt Romney.
Yeah. Now we have just Mary Burke as the only, I should say, well-known candidate who has announced her intention to challenge Governor Scott Walker. But I just saw in the news that another Democrat in Milwaukee says she is going to run. Marsha Mercedes Perkins registered to run on Monday, but apparently there is no campaign site for her, and a spokesperson for the Democratic Party didn't know anything about her. If a no-name, for the lack of a better term, maybe some sort of token opposition shows up for a primary, does that do any good or any harm?
No, not really. I think you need a well-known, well-funded candidate to make the primary campaign significant. If it's just a few people on the ballot that no one's heard of and aren't really contesting the election any serious way, I don't think that changes the equation at all. I think that still really makes Mary Burke the presumptive nominee, and she can campaign now really focusing on Scott Walker.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other concern from some progressives is that Mary Burke is not progressive enough. And our guest, and I'll say it was Tony Palmieri on The Week in Review, said that progressives aren't going to be fired up to get out the vote for Mary Burke, whereas he thought Kathleen Vinehout would do that. What about that?
Well, yeah, so I think that, again, that one cuts both ways. So I think he's absolutely right that is an issue that Mary Burke faces, is the progressives in the party, the real sort of liberal wing of the Democratic Party, doesn't entirely back her campaign at this point, and that they were more supportive of Kathleen Vinehout, certainly, it seemed like, at least, coming into that potential election. So there's no doubt that that's an issue that the Burke faces, is how to galvanize the base, how to make sure that the liberal base of the party is fired up and will turn out in a midterm election. And that's another thing to keep in mind here, that Republicans do better in Wisconsin in midterm elections. It's in presidential years where we get a huge turnout that tends to lean a little more Democratic. And so that's, mobilizing that base in a midterm year is definitely an issue for Mary Burke. On the other hand, it cuts the other way, in that not having a primary election from someone more from the liberal wing of the party, she can focus more now, Mary Burke can focus more on the independents. And that's where this campaign is going to be won or lost, is on the independents. And if she had to tack to the left during the primaries and maybe make a few promises or campaign pledges, to try to appeal more to the left during the primary, that makes it all the more difficult then to appeal to the independents during the general election. So having that freedom now to work more on getting those centrist independent voters, I think that will be a plus for the campaign. And then she obviously has to work on making sure she can turn out the base as well.
We'll talk more about the importance of the independents in a moment, but why do some progressives not think Mary Burke is progressive enough?
Well, they would have liked to hear stronger comments from her about the Act 10 and her, working to try to overturn that. The contributions that public employees have had to make to their health insurance plans and their pensions, she said that, she doesn't think that necessarily is a bad idea. So there's a few issues like that where they would have preferred a stronger, liberal anti-Walker position, basically, from her on some of those issues. Some liberals have wanted her to come out more strongly against Scott Walker's budget. And she recently has been saying some things about Walker's tax plans, and so I think we're starting to see some indications that she's going in that direction. But the liberal base, you know, wants her to be, you know, more strongly anti-Walker, I think, basically.
We are talking about the race for governor in Wisconsin this year, following the news that State Senator Kathleen Vinehout is not going to seek the Democratic nomination for governor, leaving Mary Burke, former Trek Bicycle executive, Madison School Board member, former Commerce Department official in the Doyle administration, as the presumptive Democratic nominee for governor. Can Mary Burke defeat Governor Walker? What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Are you still hoping, if you are a progressive Democrat, that someone else will enter the Democratic race? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 20 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, January the 21st. We are talking about the race for governor in Wisconsin this year. And welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are talking about whether Democrat Mary Burke can convince progressive Democrats to vote for her. And what about the independents? Are they likely to vote for Governor Walker or Mary Burke? What are the major issues likely to be in the campaign for governor this year? Governor Walker is going to be delivering his State of the State address this week, and we'll talk a little bit about what he's likely to say, and whether he has a strong record to run on. We are talking gubernatorial politics in Wisconsin with our guest, David Cannon, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Let's take some calls. We have George in Monroe with us first. Hello, George. You're on the air.
Good morning. I think the essential problem with politics, our politics in this state and probably every other state, is this winner-take-all mentality that if you get 51%, you can rewrite everything. That's exactly what Walker did. And if the progressives think that if that's the game plan, that they can come back and do the same thing, it's not a winning strategy. And if they're not motivated to get out and work to turn Scott Walker out of office for what he's done, then they're delusional.
Well, David Cannon, wouldn't a Democrat, whether or not you're at the far left of the party, want to replace Governor Walker?
Well, right. I think what George is pointing to is this idea that we have now kind of radical swings back and forth. You know, when one party gains control, they think they should change all the policies of the previous administration. And I agree with him that I think that is a tendency in state politics now that really, you know, is kind of harmful, because you do get kind of radical swings in the status quo. It's not a good way to run the political system. Now, on the other hand, I think that he you know, doesn't have to worry so much about that happening in this next election cycle. Even if a liberal Democrat were to win the governorship, they wouldn't be able to have the same kind of radical swing back in the other direction, simply because Republicans are still going to control the state assembly for sure. I mean, best case scenario for the Democrats would be they win the governorship in the Senate. But there's almost no scenario that has them retaking control of the assembly, which means that there's no way any Democratic governor could come in and impose an agenda the way that Scott Walker did in 2011. So just in terms of practical reality, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, and why is the assembly not in play?
Well, they just have too many safe seats. The redistricting that happened in this last redistricting cycle left the Republicans with a lot of safe seats, and it would take another huge wave election like we saw in 2010 for the Republicans to tip that, and even then it'd be pretty tough to retake control of the assembly.
Didn't the conservative Tea Party wing of the Republican Party, isn't that extreme responsible for that wave election?
Well, I think, you know, they certainly like to claim credit for that wave election, and there's something to that. But on the other hand, you can also point to races that the Republicans probably would have won had they not had a Tea Party nominee at the top of the tickets. Especially, there's several Senate races in 2010. The Republicans almost certainly would have won in Nevada, Colorado, Delaware, had they not had a Tea Party candidate on the top of the ticket. So while the Tea Party, I think, was instrumental in helping galvanize Republican turnout in that election and really, you know, getting the base energized, they in a way moved a little too far to the right in terms of capturing as many races as they would have.
So back specifically to Mary Burke and the, I guess, the perception that she is a moderate Democrat. Can a moderate Democrat win the state of Wisconsin?
Well, I think only a moderate Democrat can beat Scott Walker. I mean, I would argue that Mary Burke is positioned very well, and I think is in some ways the ideal Democrat to be running against Scott Walker, because she is more moderate. And you, again, to win the election, the general election, you have to be able to win independent voters. And if you have a candidate who's too far to the left, they're not going to be able to appeal to those independent voters. I think her background in business as well is going to be, you know, crucial for this campaign, because it's going to focus on the jobs pledge of Scott Walker and how many jobs have been created in the state of the economy here in Wisconsin. And her background in business, I think, will help her in that regard, and I think will be appealing to a lot of independents. So I think being, you know, more of a centrist in the general election is probably a necessary condition for having a chance to beat Scott Walker.
And it doesn't hurt that she is independently wealthy?
Absolutely. That's another thing that, you know, having enough money to compete in this election is critical as well. I mean, Scott Walker is a tremendous fundraiser. That in the recall election, there were over $45 million spent on the Republican side, $29 million raised by Scott Walker. I mean, that's just a huge amount of money in Wisconsin politics. In contrast, Tom Barrett raised $2.9 million. So Scott Walker raised 10 times as much money as Tom Barrett in that recall election. Now, Barrett did have about $14 million in outside money that was spent on his behalf, but Mary Burke won't have as much of a problem in that regard, because she can spend some of her own money the way that Herb Kohl always did. I mean, Herb Kohl was elected, reelected three times to the U.S. Senate by, you know, funding his own campaigns from his own financial wealth. And so Mary Burke is not going to be entirely self-funded like that. And she did raise apparently about $1.4 million in the first 3 months of the campaign starting this last fall. And so she has shown that she's a good fundraiser, but Scott Walker is a tremendous fundraiser. And that money is going to be a huge part of this campaign, and Mary Burke's ability to self-fund to some extent will definitely be a plus for the Democrats.
John in Windsor is with us. Hello, John.
Hi. I think that Scott Walker just got a $911 million gift last week when the Legislative Fiscal Bureau came up with the fact that we have that $911 million more in tax collections. And I think that that's going to make it very difficult for any Democrat, no matter if you're progressive or moderate. You know, he's got $911 million worth of goodies he can give out in tax cuts or different kind of spending and things. And to be quite honest about the progressive thing, you know, progressives are going to vote for Mary Burke simply because they hate Scott Walker so much that it isn't going to matter. And I think that Professor Cannon is absolutely correct. You need to have a moderate to get the swing middle vote.
All right. Thanks, John. Well, what about the nearly $1 billion surplus that was just projected? David Cannon, is that going to be is that going to make it hard to defeat Scott Walker?
Yeah, John's absolutely right. That's a huge plus for the Walker campaign to have the $900 million surplus that was just announced to be able to have it, you know, go to tax cuts or whatever else they're going to do with the surplus. That's a huge plus for the Walker campaign, certainly in an election year. And his other point also is very well taken. This the idea that, you know, the liberals, you know, are so opposed to Scott Walker, they'll vote against him no matter who the candidate is. There's the early Marquette poll that was taken, I believe it was back in late October, The first poll that was done of Burke versus Walker showed 45% of Wisconsin voters saying they'd vote for Mary Burke and 47% for Scott Walker. Well, the interesting thing about that poll is that 70% of the people in that poll said they really didn't know enough about Mary Burke to have an opinion about her one way or the other. Yet 45% said they're of the entire electorate said they're going to vote for Mary Burke. And so that shows to me there's a floor basically of about 45% that'll vote against Scott Walker in this state no matter who's running. And so the trick is to, you know, for the Democrats is to get that additional 5% plus one to get, you know, over the just to get the majority, basically. And that's where, again, appealing to the independents will be crucial.
Yeah. Does Governor Walker, you know, have a reason to toot a horn over this surplus? He says that, you know, that shows that, I don't know, his reforms are working. And that's why now, you know, we're much better shape today than we were when he took office.
Yeah, well, no doubt that you know, he can absolutely claim some credit for the surplus, that the cuts in expenditures that came on the, especially for public employees, and the amount of money the state was putting into, you know, the insurance, health insurance plans and pension plans and so on, that absolutely, you know, saved money. There's no doubt about that. So he can clearly claim some credit. On the other hand, there also, if you look nationwide, almost every state in the country has a surplus right now. So this is because the economy in general is recovering, and Wisconsin is being helped by that nationwide economic recovery.
We are going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about the race for governor in Wisconsin this year. And maybe I'll have you answer this. If the gubernatorial election were to be held today, who would get your vote? Would it be Governor Scott Walker, or would it be Democrat Mary Burke? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Can the only announced Democrat running for governor, Mary Burke, defeat Governor Scott Walker this fall? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 7:37 on this Tuesday, January 21st. 1-800-642-1234 if you have an answer to that question or a question for our guest. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Talking about the race for governor in Wisconsin this year, following the news on Friday that State Senator Kathleen Vinehout will not seek the Democratic nomination for governor. She says she needs to recover from injuries that she received in a car accident last month and won't have the time to commit to the type of campaign necessary for victory. So again, that leaves the only officially announced candidate to challenge Governor Scott Walker to be former Trek Bicycle executive, former State Commerce Department official, and a Madison School Board member, Mary Burke, to challenge Governor Scott Walker this fall. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. We are talking with David Cannon, a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And our next caller is Mike in Franklin. Hello, Mike.
Good morning. Me personally, I could never vote for Scott Walker. For him to have not allowed 80 or 90,000 more Wisconsinites to have health insurance is immoral to me. The most important thing is for people at least to have that security. And because he wants to play politics, he didn't look out for my fellow citizens. That's the way I feel.
Yeah. Do we know how Mary Burke feels about this, Professor Cannon?
Yeah, so what Mike's talking about there is the expansion of Medicaid that was initially required in Obamacare, and the Supreme Court said that states could opt out of that if they wanted to because they saw it as coercive federalism, as they defined it. And so Scott Walker, along with many other conservative Republican governors, did opt out and decide not to expand Medicaid. Instead, had the people who would have been covered buy insurance on the exchanges. And so that's the background on that that story of not expanding the coverage for the 80 or 90,000 Wisconsinites that Mike mentioned. Mary Burke has been not entirely clear of her position on this. I mean, it sounds like she probably would be open to expanding Medicaid, but as far as I've seen, I mean, this is something that, you know, it may have changed since last time I saw this, but last time I saw, she hadn't made a firm commitment to doing that, but said it's something that her campaign is definitely looking at and sounded like they were leaning in that direction.
Yeah, and in fact, Rose on Facebook writes, she, Burke, is too much like Walker, but if push comes to shove, she said she would take the federal money for Badger Care, and I have many friends in Wisconsin who need health care. So I guess as of now, it would have to be Burke. Well, a couple of things. Is Mary Burke too much like Scott Walker?
Well, no. I mean, I think that there are, you know, huge differences between Burke and Walker on many issues that are important to people in Wisconsin. And so I don't think there'll be any problem that voters have in differentiating between the two candidates come the general election. And once the general election campaign is ongoing and we have, you know, debates between the candidates, I think the voters will see there's some pretty clear differences here.
Yeah. Well, one big difference is that Mary Burke is a woman and Governor Walker is a man. How will the so-called war on women play into this race?
Well, yeah, the war on women, you know, definitely could be an issue here, and more broadly the gender gap that we've seen in national politics and here in Wisconsin for the last, you know, couple of decades, and really in an accentuated way in the last couple of election cycles. And I think that plays to Mary Burke's favor, that we saw in the Baldwin-Thompson campaign this last election cycle, you know, electing the first woman to the U.S. Senate in Wisconsin history. Well, voters would have the same opportunity to elect a woman to be our first governor in Wisconsin history with Mary Burke. And so I think there is something of an historical, you know, precedent like that that the voters, some voters anyway, you know, do like to be a part of. And also the gender gap is something that Mary Burke, I think, can play to her advantage. That if you look at Scott Walker's numbers from both the 2010 election and the recall, there was a huge gender gap, a 9-point gender gap in the 2010 election, 12-point gender gap in the recall election, where Tom Barrett got 52% of the women's vote and 40% of the men's vote, where Scott Walker got 59% of the male vote and 47% of the female vote. And so that 12-point gender gap is huge, and Mary Burke can definitely, I think, take advantage of that. Now, on the other hand, the flip side of that is that she also has to be able to appeal to men, that if she is down in the low 40s the way that Tom Barrett and Russ Feingold were in his campaign against Ron Johnson, and only getting 42% of the male vote, she's not going to win. She needs to be up more around 45-46% of the male vote the way Tammy Baldwin was, and then be able to get, say, 55-58% of the women's vote, and she'd be able to win with that kind of mix of voters.
Interesting. So why do more women vote for Democratic candidates?
Well, I think it's a range of issues that, you know, when this started, it goes back to Ronald Reagan, the first time we saw the gender gap appear in national politics. And the thinking was at that time it was national security issues, that, you know, that men voted for Republicans based on national security, women voted for Democrats based more on social policy. And while there's still something to that, that's definitely not the whole part of the story, because now we have, you know, say, you know, Barack Obama is our commander in chief. It's harder to, you know, to argue that, you know, Democrats are soft on security when Obama has basically adopted many of the same policies that George Bush had on national security. And so it's a more nuanced story now, I think. For some women today, it's definitely a factor of what you led off this question with, the war on women, the battle over reproductive rights and scaling back on access to abortions in many states, the perceived lack of commitment for equal rights and civil rights among Republicans, and a more perceived, you know, support for those kinds of anti-discrimination policies among Democrats. That definitely plays a role in this as well.
Let's go back to the phones and take another call. Bill in Osseo is with us. Hello, Bill.
Hi, Joy. You know, I'm voting for Burke. But, you know, I don't think she's going to win because if you look at the national scene, Walker's the only moderate Republican that has practically announced he's, you know, running for president. With Christie on the ropes, they're not going to let Walker lose. He's going to get so much money in here. I think 20-1 was bad in the recall. Was it 10-1? I can't remember. The amount of money that Walker's going to bring in to win this is just going to be stupendous. Probably the largest for any gubernatorial race ever.
So, all right. Thanks, Bill. So, again, he thinks Governor Walker is going to have tons of money. But also, it sounded like he thought, I don't know, who his base is not going to let him lose because they want him to run for president.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. It's something we haven't talked about yet, actually, in the hour, is, you know, Scott Walker's presidential ambitions and how that plays a role in his gubernatorial campaign. And it's something that the Walker campaign, you know, doesn't really want to talk about right now. And they say, you know, we're not, you know, thinking about the presidency. We're, you know, running for governor. In fact, he hasn't even announced, you know, formally he's running for governor yet. And so that's going to be coming later this spring. But I think Bill makes a very interesting point there that we are going to see an awful lot of outside money here. There's no doubt that this will be like the recall election, I think, where we saw about $30 million, almost $30 million in outside money in that recall election. And so we could easily see that in this gubernatorial race. And I think the critical thing is, will Mary Burke be able to attract that outside money as well? Because there's no doubt that Scott Walker is going to be able to, in part because of the presidential ambitions, as Bill pointed out, his base wanting to make sure he doesn't lose, so he'll be able to run for the presidency in 2016. But also just the this is seen as an important race around the country, and so I think there will be outside money. And so will Mary Burke be able to tap into that outside money as well? Well, that's one of the big questions, I think, in this campaign.
Don in Door County emails, Burke winning is immaterial. Flipping the state Senate majority is more important than a Democratic governor alone. And then he goes on to say Walker will be on to the presidential election in a year anyway. And what are your guest thoughts about that? I guess you touched on that to some extent. But he thinks that Burke winning is immaterial, that the state Senate is more important.
Well, I mean, I guess I can see what he means by that, and that if the Democrats were to regain the state Senate, that alone would give them the ability to have more of a say in terms of, you know, Scott Walker's agenda. So, for example, how we're going to spend the $900 million surplus. If Democrats controlled the state Senate, we'd have a very different mix, I think, of policies adopted than if Democrats didn't control the Senate. And so clearly that's right, that would be very significant as well. Whether it's more significant than controlling the governorship, I'm not as sure about that. For one thing, the governor has a 4-year term, whereas the Senate could flip again 2 years later. You know, so you have half of the senators up every 2 years, and so that could flip right back, you know, 2 years later. And so the governor can do a lot, especially, let's say, just in terms of the veto. So a governor could single-handedly stop anything this legislature would want to do because the Democrats are able to at least sustain a veto, you know, if you had a Democratic governor. And so I would say, on balance, if you had to pick one or the other as a Democrat, probably having the governor would be somewhat more significant than having the state Senate. But Don's right that having a state Senate would be huge as well.
Well, you know, you mentioned that maybe Governor Walker's base wants to reelect him because they like him and they want him to run for president. But what about independents? Do we want our governor to start running for president before his term is over?
Well, that's a very good point, that I think you would have some voters that are kind of in the middle that are not sure if they're leaning towards Burke or Walker, who could be drawn to Mary Burke on that point, that if they think that Scott Walker is going to be campaigning for president, that's pretty much a full-time job. And so if he's, you know, governor and campaigning for president, that means he really won't be able to be governor very much. And so I could see some independents thinking, boy, we'd really rather have someone who's working here full-time as governor rather than running for president. So that could come into play. I think it's one reason the Walker campaign is really downplaying the whole idea of presidential ambition, that they're, you know, saying, no, we're focused on this election, on being governor, and we're not even thinking about the president right now.
Well, we are talking about the race for governor in Wisconsin, wondering if Mary Burke can defeat Governor Scott Walker. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. State Senator Kathleen Vinehout Friday announced she's not going to seek the Democratic nomination for governor, leaving Mary Burke as the only announced candidate right now. Will anybody else enter the fray? So far, it doesn't sound like it. Do you want someone else to enter the Democratic race for governor? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 9 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, January the 21st, we are talking about the race for governor in Wisconsin and welcoming your thoughts and questions now that we know that State Senator Kathleen Vinehout is not going to run for the Democratic nomination. That means just Mary Burke is the only officially announced candidate to challenge Governor Scott Walker. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is David Cannon, a professor of political science at UW-Madison. Our next caller is John in Elkhart Lake. Hello, John.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think it all comes down to what the Walker administration is going to do with the surplus. I think if they, and they should, regardless, if he gets reelected or not, but I think they need to give every Wisconsinite and every child a check right off the bat and then find out what they want to do with the money. And I think once they do that, that may or may give him a boost in being reelected. But if he doesn't do that, I think Burke could take it.
You think if he doesn't actually send a rebate check to people that that Burke would win? Well, all right. What about that, Professor Cannon? Is that going to talk us into reelecting Governor Walker if we get our money back?
Well, I think it depends on how this gets framed in the debate over how to spend the surplus. You're having some Democrats right now, and even a few Republicans who in the state legislature who are saying, maybe we shouldn't give all this money back in a rebate, that these surpluses come and go. We need to build up a rainy day fund to make sure the next time our budget takes a hit, we won't be in the same position of having to fill the hole by having huge cuts in spending. So building up a rainy day fund, maybe paying down some of our debt is another thing that some more fiscally conservative people are talking about doing rather than having it sent back just in a rebate check. Although there certainly would be a lot of popular support for John's position that, hey, give us all a rebate check. That's going to be a popular thing to do in election year. And it sounds like that's what the Walker administration is leaning towards doing. They might not give back the entire $900 million. I'm sure they'll at least set aside some for a rainy day fund, but that's what the debate's going to be about, is how much do we save of this and how much do we actually give back to the taxpayers?
When governors give their State of the State addresses, they generally, put a positive spin on things, and the governor's probably going to say that the State of the State is strong or, headed in the right direction or something along those lines. I mean, your analysis of the state of Wisconsin, are we doing pretty well or not?
Well, it's one of these things that you can spin the story either way. And so what we're going to hear from Governor Walker is that we're definitely headed in the right direction. With the budget surplus, it shows that his budget policies from 2011 are now working. That while job growth was not great in the early years of the recovery, we now have had strong job creation in the last 12 months, if that's headed in the right direction. So what we're going to hear from Scott Walker is a lot what we heard from Barack Obama, actually, in 2012, that we're headed in the right direction. Things are getting better. What you're going to hear from the Democrats is that, if you look at the whole picture, it's really not a very good story, that we're somewhere around 40th in job creation overall since the recovery. If you compare us especially to our neighboring states like Minnesota, they've done much, much better than we have in terms of job recovery and the economy overall. And even in the fiscal picture as well, that they're done better than we've done. And so you'll hear that more sort of nuanced story from the Democrats. And you know, and there's truth in both sides. I mean, I think there to get the overall picture, you have to look at both sides of the story and make your own judgments in it as to which is the more compelling.
Oh, by the way, tomorrow at this time, it's our big question, and we're going to have two guests from the different political parties in Wisconsin. Brian Schimming from the Republican Party and Mike Tate from the Democratic Party will be our big question debaters tomorrow between 7 and 8, and they will tell us what they think the state of Wisconsin is in preview of the governor's address, which we will be carrying on Wisconsin Public Radio 7 o'clock on Wednesday night. Sean Johnson and Frederica Freiberg will be co-hosting our coverage 7 o'clock on Wednesday night, the state of the state. Let's take another call from Tom in Burlington. Hi, Tom.
In the last election, they used the saying, do the math, do the numbers. If you take the math of this $1 billion surplus and you take the numbers of the unemployed, they don't add up. And it's almost embarrassing for a governor to get up and say he's got a $1 billion surplus when we've had a recession. In my community, we've lost 45 people have lost their homes. I talked to a school teacher. She lost $125,000 from her retirement account. She's absolutely heartbroken because this $1 billion they've got, it came out of the backs of hardworking people. It's a real shame. They haven't solved the problem. We spend $16 billion a year in the state of Wisconsin to buy energy from other states. He got rid of that railroad, which is a big, huge, giant mistake.
Thank you. Lots of different issues that Tom has issue with Governor Walker. There is fodder for Democrats to go after Governor Walker on, Professor Cannon.
Right, and I think Tom just made exactly the case that Democrats will be making in this campaign is that, yeah, we have a budget surplus right now, but this came on the backs of school teachers and public employees who, you know, really have had pretty tough times in the last decade or so without much in the way of pay raises and so on. And so this is unemployment, you know, still is a big problem in the state, and there are many unemployed workers. And so this is part of the national narrative that's going on right now as well, is the inequality issue is getting a lot more attention. With the top 1%, the top 0.1% has been benefiting the most from this recovery, and you still have a large segment of the American working public that is suffering right now and is hurting. And so I think that's a part of the kind of story and debate that's going to come out in this campaign, is that, yeah, we have things that look pretty good right now with the budget surplus, but yet we have a lot of issues that haven't been addressed in the state.
Well, we have just a minute to go, and no time for another caller who wondered why Russ Feingold or Dave Obey or another well-known Democrat wouldn't run against Governor Walker or, you know, to seek the Democratic nomination. Quick react?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, Russ Feingold has indicated he wants to sort of stay out of politics now for a while. I think Dave Obey, you know, sort of gave his career already to the state of Wisconsin, and they just probably didn't have the stomach for the kind of campaign that would be necessary to run a tough statewide campaign right now.
We'll leave it there for now. Thank you so much for being with us. David Cannon, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Thanks to Christy Taylor, to Robin Cherry, and to Cynthia Schuster for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.